Hey gang, welcome back. Matt here. Welcome to Zero Carb Journal. I'm excited. I figured out how to make it a podcast, you guys, so you can subscribe on iTunes or Google Play, and yeah, that's pretty cool, huh? So I'll try and tune it that towards the podcast a little bit, and I'll still put some visual stuff in the videos for you guys now and then, and we'll see where this goes. Give me some direction as well if you'd like. Love to hear any comments or what you'd like to hear about. I'm going to take it a little slow. I got a lot of stuff to share, and I'm going to move through it kind of step by step. But first of all, let me just say thank you guys so much, everybody, for all of your support. Boy, I had a great day the other day, hearing all your comments, reading all the dialogue back and forth, and all the positive support. It really made a difference, and thank you very, very much for watching, listening, and being positive. So this one, I'm going to do frequently asked questions. A lot of you folks had lots of comments and questions and assumptions and speculation and all those normal things that we all have and had before experiencing this way of eating. So this will be frequently asked questions, and I'm going to probably shortly after this one go deeper into my story. I really want to tell you guys how I was suffering and what this has helped me through, because that's a big part of my story and why I'm here. So, frequently asked questions. Zero carb, a carnivorous way of eating. What is it? What is it not? Things like that. So, it's called zero carb. As far as I know, that term was coined by Bear, Owsley Stanley, right? The famous Grateful Dead co-conspirator, awesome sound man, LSD chemist, and all sorts of exciting things. He was a carnivore for, I think, something like 50 years, since the 50s, I believe, maybe 60s, early 60s. But at any rate, he's a famous carnivore and coined the term zero carb. And his definition was, it really doesn't have anything to do with whether you have, you know, 1 gram of carbs from eggs or whatever. It really is just nothing from plants, only animal products. So it's a bit of a misnomer, but the name is stuck. There's a whole lot of people using that all over the place. And so zero carb it is. It's basically the absence of plants in your diet. Now, I would like to stress that, in my opinion, there aren't rules to zero carb so much as there's observations. And the observation, you know, for me, is so important, because what I want to stress is that while there aren't rules, you don't know what effects things that you're inputting are having on your body, both good and bad, until you really have a flat baseline from which to gauge any inputs. So, you know, even I, it's so hard to just jump right in and be like, beef and water, that's it, that's all I'm going to do. It really is what you want to get to. And it really, I would say, and I didn't do it, but I would say the best way to do it in hindsight, which would be difficult, would be just to dive right in and just go beef and water for 30 days. And the reason I say that is because, you know, I started with the things that are acceptable, but might cause some people problems. So I left in, you know, eggs and bacon, and I left cheese out because I was already had been down that path and thought I had issues with it. So I didn't have any dairy, but I left, you know, stuff in. Pork, I started eating, was eating pork and lamb and fowl, chicken and eggs, and a lot of fish, which was great. And at any rate, so I just had quite a few ingredients in my diet, co-founders really, that were going to make that difficult, to discern what any of them might impact, any of them might be having on me individually. So since then, I now am just down to beef and water, and took a while for me to get there. I was still drinking coffee when I started as well, which is fine, and I think it's such a addictive part of our life that it's probably better to leave it in at first, because it's pretty disruptive to pull it out of your way of life. But eventually, you know, for me, You know, one of the great advantages of this way of eating is the long, stable energy that I feel. I no longer have those ups and downs, both in my mood or in my energy. And so, kind of doing a Mr. Rogers there, taking my slippers off. You guys in the podcast can only hear that, but they're making some noise. So, anyways, the long, stable energy and the stable mood stability that I never have experienced before in my life that are a benefit of this way of eating. And so ditching coffee was part of that. Anyways, back to the topic at hand, which is the absence of plants, the absence of stuff, and the fact there are no rules, and that really it's based on observation. Just want to stress that the beef and water isn't a rule. It just is a place you want to get to so that then you can add your eggs back in and say for sure that there's no ill effects from them. They're inflammatory for a lot of people. I feel like they are for me. I'm going to go back and keep trying. But I definitely haven't felt as good when I had them as a part of my diet once I got them out. So a lot of folks in the very beginning will say, well, what about spices, or what about this thing of mine that's my favorite, or that are probably benign and are probably fine for most people. You know, I'm coming from a place of being, I think, chronically ill my whole life and very ill for when I changed over. So I'm not saying everyone should eat this way or needs to eat this way or anything like that. And I do believe there are many ways, we're very adaptable, there are many ways for humans to be healthy and many diets that would probably a human can be healthy on. But I will say that if you're doing this with any interest in you of seeking more knowledge about your health and yourself, then just dive in and don't second guess it and try and avoid the spices if you can. And start from there, and then add those things back in. So yeah, so what is it? It's carnivorous way of eating. Absence of plants. And for me, that holds true. I have run into spices along the way, and I always feel poorly afterwards. So I really am eating only meat and drinking only water. At this point, I'm not salting my meat, although I was, and I do think that when you're in transition, it's important to keep up with electrolytes, because I think that's a difficult part of transition. I had cramping and things like that when I changed over, so I was salting and supplementing with magnesium at first. But now I'm not salting, and I use no spices, and it's so interesting how your tastes change. I don't know how to say this without sounding inflammatory, but, you know, in hindsight, looking back, I just feel like sugar in all of its forms is so addictive to our brains that we sort of are unreasonable in the way we approach it. And that isn't exactly accurate, but the point is once you get away from it, and you're away from it for a long enough time, and I mean all of forms of carbohydrates, whether it's being driven from your microbiome driving desire through the vagus nerve and those pathways, you know, a whole host of organisms inside your body with, you know, creating desire and drives and things within you, which we know scientifically is becoming a known issue, you know, a known factor that we have a two-way communication pathway between the gut and the hypothalamus or the brain. And so whether the addiction comes from there and the gut biome drives us to want to feed it by feeding it fiber, or whether it's straight sugar or a combination of those things, most likely compounds in the plants, in various foods we eat, I don't know. But I do know that once you get farther away from it, it seems less and less like food. And many of the comments when people consider this, and I don't know many of you personally, but those of you who know me know I was a huge foodie. I mean, forever. Like, I have been growing weed on this land. I bought my little art grain mill. I had a powder-coated sonic blue like my Stratocasters. And I ground my own wheat and made my own sourdough here. For probably a decade, I had a live culture going on my counter. I made sourdough every day. And I was way into cooking and recipes. I mean, I had every gadget there was. And he grew all of my ingredients and canned everything. You know, I was always in the kitchen doing stuff for hours and hours. Excuse me. I would have thought I would have missed that terribly, but in reality, the opposite is true. I look back now and I just see someplace I've moved beyond. I won't say anything negative about it because it was a great source of pleasure for me. And hobbies are great. But I'm not sure that it was totally healthy for me because I was really obsessed, you know, with the next meal and the next recipe and all that. And of course, if you look at Ansel Keys' Minnesota experiment, I'd love to demonize him, but he goes right into that whole starvation thing and you can look right at it. The people who were eating under their calories were obsessed with the next recipe, obsessed with a new way to prepare some kind of food that would take them all day to prepare their little bit of food they got to eat. And that was me for very much of my life, because I was taught to eat more healthy whole grains and more fruits and veggies, and, you know, I wasn't getting enough nutrition, in my opinion. So, what it is, frequently asked questions, I'm really going off and rambling. Hope we like the long form. I guess it'll be well suited to a podcast. So the absence of plants, and I already touched on the issues that why, you know, those might be issues for some people, whether it's fiber and gut biome, which I believe was a big factor for me. I think I'm autoimmune, leaning towards, you know, ulcerative colitis or Crohn's or something along those lines. And so the fiber seemed to be a real problem for me. So that was a big one. And I know that that drove my inflammation through my body, leading to all sorts of symptoms. So whether it's the sugar and all the inflammation that that can bring, whether it's compounds, we know that plants are medicine. And that's another thing I'd like to bring up. Plants, absolutely, in my opinion, are medicine. They are food too, you know, for a lot of humans, but I don't negate a lot of the positive qualities that plants do have. To me, that just reinforces my position now is that, you know, we look at broccoli and say, oh, sulfuric green or whatever that's called. It's such a great compound. Sure, it is, I believe. There are probably a lot of benefits from those compounds, but they also come with anti-nutrient compounds. You know, they're all working evolutionarily to try to stay alive. So they're coming up with pesticides and ways to keep from being eaten. And those compounds, as we eat those things day to day, possibly, I don't know, loading up in your system, someone might have an issue. Maybe I have an issue with one of those compounds, and eating all that stuff every day in large amounts eventually stresses my system to the point where it breaks. I don't know. Those are just some ideas about why the absence of plants might make a difference to some people. But to me, the biggest one is sugar and fiber, and just the way that gets your, for me personally, the way that kicks off your gut into fermentation, which we know is a part of that, and the way that microbiome can grow and change and how that affects us. So let's move on into nutrition. So animals, you know, I believe a meat-only diet is complete nutrition. And the reason I believe that is because the animals themselves are complete mammals. So I feel like now that I've gotten this far down the road, I used to think, oh, I need plants for nutrition, for the building blocks. But really, you know, I was trying to build a human with plants, right? Like, go find all the things that make up a mammal in plants and put it inside me and get it processed. And I mean, for the most part, we don't make, well, now I don't know. I don't think we, you know, endogenously make, you know, a lot of the things we need to ingest them. So a cow is made of the same things we are for the most part. This is really simplistic and it's kind of silly, but at any rate, that's the sort of the underlying concept that I sort of believe is, you know, what makes them, or why I look at them and say that's complete nutrition. So people will always say the common questions, vitamin C. What about vitamin C? You're going to get scurvy. I'm not the guy to do the big science breakdown. It's not true. We can just observe, all of us. We can observe me. It's been 11 months. You know, I'd have scurvy. I would. And some of my heroes, the Andersons, Joe and Charlene, 20 years on ribeye only, store-bought ribeye only. They look phenomenal, both of them, for their age. Such wonderful inspirations. Thank you guys both. You know, so that's a real common one, vitamin C. Now, I can send you to some science sites that you can show you why we as carnivores might not need as much. Maybe we get the things that vitamin C is a precursor for. Maybe we are much more able to absorb it without vitamin C and glucose competing for uptake in our liver, from what I understand. With my basic understanding, don't hold me to that. but at any rate, for whatever reason, it's not true. We don't get scurvy. I don't have scurvy. It's fine. I don't supplement. Another one is organ meats, another common misconception. You know, again, I won't go into the science, I'll just go into the observation. What should I be experiencing wrong with me from not eating them? You know, that's more what I'm concerned about. There's a whole lot of should out there in our diets and nutrition world. You should eat this, and oh, you're only eating organ meats, or you're only eating meat, you should eat organ meats. You should eat a lot of fat. What am I trying to avoid by doing that? You know, nutritional deficiency that manifests as how. So I'm not trying to be contrary. I'm just saying my guiding rule I'm paying the most attention to as I'm observing my health and my performance. I do go to the doctor regularly. I just got blood tests last week. And so, you know, when I think of those things, I did start out, I tried organ meats. I, you know, tried to do all the things I was supposed to, eat a lot of fat. I didn't like organ meats. They made me sick. So I don't eat them. I feel great. And come to find out, in Stephenson's book, Fat of the Land, he spent time with the Inuit. According to him, they didn't eat organ meat all the time. Not all of them. And so I think that's one of our Western myths that we pin on these people. Oh, well, they must be getting their vitamin A because we know about vitamin A. I think if we just don't worry about it, seems to be working itself out. And like I said, when I felt like I had cramps and needed something, I'll take magnesium. And I do think it's wise to not be fanatical and to pay attention and observe. But that's what I'm running on is my observation. So lots of fat is another frequently asked question and another misconception. I do very poorly on a lot of fat. I made myself pretty ill for the first few weeks trying to keep my macros up, you know, and have an appropriate fat to protein ratio and to try and mimic what other people are doing. And the fact of the matter is if I eat ribeye twice a day, every day for a few days in a row, I get ill and I will be vomiting and feeling very, very unwell. So I tend to I eat 80-20 ground beef mostly, tend to render most of the fat out. I grill it as hamburgers and I cook them pretty well. And I feel really well, really good doing that. And sometimes I'll start craving fat and I'll render a little less out or eat a ribeye, and that's great, but it isn't mandatory. So one of the most beautiful things about this way of eating is it is so simple, and it's very difficult to keep it that simple, especially in the beginning. So my advice to anyone starting, keep it simple. You know, when you see dialogue about people who haven't been here, or dialogue from people who haven't been here but are speculating on it, you really notice. And when you go anywhere and look at other nutrition, people trying to fix their guts or fix anything, everything's so complicated, right? Like even when people talk about, when I bring up that I eat only meat, they're like, oh, well, make sure you're getting some of this, and oh, essential carbohydrates, and oh, you must add fiber or this. You know, nutrition shouldn't be that difficult. We've been around here for a long time. None of the other species, maybe not none, but most of the other species have no problem staying healthy. They don't have chronic disease and illness like we do for the last few centuries. And they don't wonder what to eat. You know, the killer whale just eats salmon. He doesn't get fat. He doesn't say, oh, maybe I should hold off, not another salmon. My cows eat the grass. They don't get overweight. And on and on and on and on. And with all of those species, they have one, you know, diet that works for all of them. So now I know that's not the case with all of us. I'm sick. I can't eat the same thing as my family eats. So I'm not saying that's entirely true. But as a guideline, to me, it gives me a lot of hope that it just can't be that difficult. You know, it can be as simple as meat and water. And once you get a little farther down the road and all those things kind of start to fall by the wayside, your cravings stop and you start to forget about the fiber that you should be eating and the vitamin C you should be having. And, you know, I bought supplements for a while in the first month thinking, oh, I'm going to need this. And the simplicity of it and the completeness of it is really just a huge part of the beauty and the reason it's so easy to be successful. It is the least restrictive diet I've ever done. I mean, it feels less restrictive than when I wasn't restricting anything, because I always felt like, oh, I can't have ice cream, that much ice cream or whatever. And now I only want meat. Maybe I want ribs today or brisket, and I can have as much as I want. My body composition just continues to improve. I'm getting leaner and stronger and fitter without worrying about macros, without worrying about calories. It's unbelievable. So that's first part of the FAQ. You know, one of the questions is, another common one is, how much do we eat? How much do I eat? So I'm small. I weigh about, I'm 137 pounds today. So usually I'm between 135 and 140. And, you know, I eat on average probably close to 4 pounds of meat a day. So now I tend to render a lot of fat out. So Dr. Sean Baker is a foot taller, 100 pounds heavier. He eats 4 pounds of meat a day. He eats 4 pounds of ribeye a day. I can't eat 4 pounds of ribeye. That's a whole lot of calories. I can eat about 2 pounds of ribeye, maybe, on a day when I'm eating a lot. But I'll eat 4 pounds of 80-20 ground beef, and I will render a lot of that fat out. And that is a pretty average day for me. So, and that brings up sourcing meat. One of the other frequently asked questions and common things is, oh, you better make sure it's grass-fed, because that's going to be far healthier. And while I agree, and I raise my own cows and raise my own sheep, I got stuck this year. I didn't see this coming, eating 4 pounds of meat a day. So I went through what was in my freezer last spring pretty quickly and was forced. I bought a couple sides of cows from local farmers. And then I was heading into fall with three rams ready to be slaughtered. And I got just assaulted by cougars. I live right against the forest, and there's mountain lion running rampant all around me. So I lost 4 sheep to cougars in October. So I didn't get to slaughter. So I have 2 pregnant heifers and a bull down there and 2 pregnant ewes, hopefully, and no more rams. So I've been buying meat, and that's a bummer. I don't want to. But I will say, I can't afford to buy grass-fed meat. And so I've been living on $2, $3 a pound ground beef almost exclusively for most of the fall. I believe that, well, I know I don't want to support factory farming, so I do want to make a change there. And I do believe that agriculturally we need to make changes. I don't believe animals are the problem. I believe big ag is the problem. We'll go farther into those arguments in another podcast. But in all forms, big ag is a problem. So I'm not excited about buying factory farmed meat. But from a health standpoint, while it is a little bit higher in omega-6, while it does have a little bit different nutrient profile, I feel like it is far superior health-wise still for me than trying to put together that same body of nutrition via plant-based foods. My body won't take it, but I, even in hindsight, I still think that the benefits far outweigh the downsides if all you can afford is store-bought meat. So I am eating quite a bit of store-bought meat right now, and I don't worry about it nutritionally. I do worry about it environmentally. So there's that one. More frequently asked questions, gut health, bowel movements, fiber necessary. You know, most people experience incredible gut health on a zero carb diet. Most of us came here, many of us came here through poor gut health and seeking respite from that. For a lot of people, it's constipation, and zero carb does a great job of healing that. For me, it was diarrhea, and zero carb has done a great job of resolving my issues with urgency and things like that as well that I experienced my whole life. So, fiber is a myth. We don't need it. It's not necessary. I'm not saying it's always a negative for everybody, and it probably is a positive relative to some other ways of eating, but I don't feel it's a positive relative to an all-meat diet, and I do feel that for me it was a big downside. So we poop just fine. Thank you very much. Frequently asked question. Probably I should have put that on the top of the list, because that is number one. So is it expensive? I just covered that a little bit. You know, for me right now, I'm running at about, let's say it's 4 pounds a day. So I'm running at about $12 a day if I buy from the store for the $3 ground beef. So, and that's, you know, that's a lot of food. That's when I'm trying to get bigger. So for most people, that's probably realistically about it. You could get a little lower, but somewhere between $8 and $12 a day is pretty reasonable. So
is expensive.
It's somewhere in the middle of the road, I guess. I don't think it's terribly expensive. Boredom, cheat days, variety, another frequently asked question, another common comment. I covered that a little bit. You just get farther away from it and you don't want anything else. None of that seems like food anymore. I literally have no temptings or cravings. Every once in a while, I'm like, I wonder what that would be like. I took a couple bites of fruit from my trees this summer. You know, I love fruit, always have, and planting fruit trees. And it didn't appeal to me. It was interesting. I was going for a bike ride, ate a berry, you know. But I take it or leave it, honestly. It doesn't seem like food. It seems like a medicine, distraction. I don't know, little treat of some kind. Maybe not even a treat, really. That's not the right word. Anyways, there's that. So drinks and drinking. Like I said, I just drink water. I think that's the best way to go. Coffee is hard to get rid of, and I think it's so stressful when you do get rid of it. It's probably best to just leave it if you're addicted to it, for at least for a while. Adaptation takes a while. Give it 30 days at least. I continue to feel like at 11 months here, I'm still adapting. But give it 30 days. You'll have some ups and downs in that time. The first few days will probably be rough. You might have some loose stools. You might think you're constipated. Constipation isn't not going to the bathroom. Constipation is feeling like you need to and not being able to. So with a lot of people, because the meat is absorbed almost completely in your body, you go to the bathroom a lot less. There's way less volume. For me, that means way less discomfort. And that, for a lot of people, that means way less often. I still have a regular movement, but some people don't go but once every few days or every week, because you really use up almost all of it. So in terms of food, what are acceptable foods? You know, I think ruminants are the best, beef and lamb, bison, things like that. Fowl is acceptable, but it's fairly low fat. So for a lot of people, that will not, it's not something you want to base your diet on, I don't believe, because I think it will lead to feeling low energy and eventually craving fat pretty badly. Fish is great for me. I eat a lot of salmon. I'm fortunate enough to have access to it. And eggs, like I said, they're acceptable, but for some people they might be an issue. So I would say leave them out at first if you can. And then you get to dairy, and again, that's another personal one. I think it's inflammatory for a lot of folks. I believe I have issues with it. I have tried some sheep cheese, aged sheep cheese recently, and it seemed like I did okay on it. So I'll add it in as something to mix it up every now and then, but I don't make it a part of my diet. Some people do. And I think if you're worried about being able to gain weight on this way of eating, I think cheese is probably a useful way to get some more fat into you. But I think if weight loss or body composition is a goal and maintaining a leaner physique, then cheese probably isn't the best, although that's just my experience and I could be totally wrong. So that's what I've got on my list for frequently asked questions. I'm sure there's more I'm forgetting, but I think that's enough for now. That's pretty long. My camera seemed to die. Maybe it's still going. And yeah, we'll come back. The next one I'll do my story about my health, and it's probably going to be long. But I'm excited to finally get that out. I've been wanting to share it for a long time. So I just wanted to get some of this stuff out first, because we get a lot of comments about this one on first sharing the diet. So hopefully that gives you an overview of where it's coming from. Again, I want to give you my point of view. There's a lot of ways I think humans can be healthy. I'm not saying these are hard and fast rules. And definitely when I bring up science or things about other cultures and what they did or didn't, you know, please don't nitpick me too much on the semantics. I'm enthusiastic and I read, you know, an article and I post a link and I say they did this, blah, and I simplify something that's much more complicated into a soundbite, not on purpose. But of course I'm wrong a lot, so I appreciate the corrections, and I just want to say I really appreciate all the support. Thank you all so much, and hope you guys find this interesting. Subscribe on iTunes, YouTube, Google Play, and I'll keep them coming, at least for a while. So thanks very much for listening and watching, and have a great day. See you next time.